Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Zimbabwe Investment Authority says Harare is targeting a $1 billion investment mark by the end of this year, despite concerns over the indigenization program.
This year alone, we have 162 investment approvals that have already been made, and we are already at the $400 million mark.
Zimbabwe is dispatching a delegation to Washington seeking the lifting of a ban in ivory trade.
If this ban was based on scientific evidence, we would have really wanted to see the numbers. As far as we know from the estimates we have got here in Zimbabwe in particular, is that our elephant population has been growing quite significantly.
And lawyers representing the editor of the state-controlled Sunday Mail newspaper, Edmund Kudzai, today failed to file a bail application at the High Court as the Committee to Protect Journalists urged the authorities to release him.
The Zimbabwe Investment Authority says Harare is targeting a $1 billion investment mark by the end of this year, despite concerns by the international community that the investment climate in the country is not conducive for running business. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi reports from Harare.
Speaking at the launch of an investment report by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, or UNICTAD, Chairperson of the Zimbabwe Investment Authority Board, Nigel Chanakira, said since the beginning of this year, Zimbabwe has approved foreign direct investment transactions worth over $400 million.
This year alone, we have 162 investment approvals that have already been made, and we are already at the $400 million mark.
Chanakira said his board expects Zimbabwe to realize over $1 billion by year-end and double the figure by the end of 2015.
But it is next year, once they've clarified the special economic zones, once they've also clarified the policy on indigenization, then from our perspective, we should really then move in the range of the $2 billion mark.
The ZIA chief, who is also a businessman, said proposals by Zimbabwe to review the indigenization policy have renewed the interest of foreign investors to seed their money into the Zimbabwean economy, especially in the mining sector.
The biggest elephant in the room was the indigenization law. And our recommendations have been, you know, forthright and said, you know, we came from Brussels recently. And immediately foreigners say, hey, you people had the land reform, you had property expropriation, you did not respect BIPA, okay? Now you come up with 51%. What does that mean?
Meanwhile, United Nations Development Programme's economic advisor, Amarakun Bandara, said Zimbabwe may fail to reach its Millennium Development Goals by 2015, owing to its failure to implement the country's new economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIMASSET.
Adequate and sustainable financing for the attainment of both ZIMASSET as well as achieving MDGs and Sustainable Development Goals targets are vital. It is also important to ensure growth with equity so that the living conditions of the broad majority are improved, and finally, upgrading Zimbabwe's technical and institutional capacities to deliver both the ZIMASSET implementation as well as achievement of sustainable development goals.
Representing Deputy Finance Minister Samuel Undenge, the acting chief economist in the finance ministry, Chengetanai Musara, said Harare requires at least $30 billion to finance its economic blueprint. Musara said the prevailing economic crunch is also contributing to the government's failure to implement the economic revival plan. However, Musara said authorities were in the process of reviewing all laws that have a direct bearing on investment in the country, such as the indigenization policy, in order to boost investor confidence.
Prioritizing investment for rehabilitating and development of infrastructure necessary for supporting and attracting investment, driving the economy and enhancing efficiency of the productive sector is very critical. And therefore, addressing the doing business environment is key in attracting and promoting foreign direct investment and also investment in general.
The World Investment Report 2014, released by UNICTAD in Harare today, indicated that most investors now prefer to invest in West African countries. The report also urges developing countries to enter into joint venture partnerships with investors in developed countries in order to improve their economies. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Zimbabwe is dispatching a delegation to Washington seeking the lifting of a ban on ivory trade. But as Blessing Zulu reports, this is mission impossible as the Obama administration has tightened screws on ivory trade.
Zimbabwe has dispatched ecologist Hilary Tendaupenyu to Washington ahead of a high-level National Parks delegation expected to lobby a U.S. congressional panel in an attempt to overturn a ban on ivory sales that it says will lead to the total collapse of the sport hunting industry. The United States Fish and Wildlife Service announced the suspension of imports of spot-hunted African elephant sourced in Zimbabwe and Tanzania in April, saying anecdotal evidence, such as the widely publicized poisoning last year of 300 elephants in Wange National Park, suggests that Zimbabwe's elephants are also under siege. The organization added that, given the current situation on the ground in both Tanzania and Zimbabwe, the service is unable to make positive findings required under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora or CITES and the Endangered Species Act to allow the import of elephant trophies from these countries. It argued further that additional killings of elephants in these countries, even if legal, is not sustainable and is not currently supporting conservation efforts that contribute towards the recovery of the species. But the Safari Operators Association of Zimbabwe President Emmanuel Fundira says the U.S. ban was done unilaterally.
In fact, that's a fallacy, because if this ban was based on scientific evidence, we would have really wanted to see the numbers. As far as we know from the estimates we have got here in Zimbabwe in particular, is that our elephant population has been growing quite significantly. Our carrying capacity, which strikes the correct ecological balance, should be about 50,000 head of elephants. And as I'm talking to you now, the best estimate we have got is that our elephant population has grown between 175 to 200,000, which means we are more than four times what we can carry.
Fundira says the ban has also affected thousands of rural Zimbabweans who benefit from ivory trade under the Community Areas Management Program for Indigenous Resources, or CAMFIRE, which is premised on the conservation of wildlife and other natural resources as a livelihood option for rural communities in marginal areas of Zimbabwe.
When these same visitors or adventure tourists are denied the opportunity to hunt elephants, which is part of the big five, it means it destroys completely the very, very essence of that industry in terms of its value. We have households which are dependent on their livelihood, up to 800,000 households whose lives depend on wildlife use. These are people who live in areas where they cannot exercise any other economic activity. So these people are now being denied their livelihood.
But when it comes to lifting the ban, Zimbabweans are not singing from the same hymn book. As chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force, Johnny Rodriguez, says the ban must be maintained as only politicians and well-connected people are benefiting from the safari operations.
I believe that the United States did the right thing by bringing the ban on imports of ivory, because I really believe it doesn't benefit the local communities.
Rodriguez maintains that Zimbabwe is exaggerating the carrying capacity of the elephants to justify sport hunting.
The last audit that they did was in 1997. And since then, you know, everybody's come up with figures which is underestimated or overestimated.
Environment Minister Xavier Kasukwere says he is confident that Washington will lift the ban, and he confirmed that Harare will be sending a delegation for the third time in less than a year to lobby the U.S. government. The first delegation met Secretary of State John Kerry, and the second met senior officials in the Obama administration. But the Obama administration has upped its opposition against ivory trade. At least 1,165 ivory specimens were seized by U.S. border agents and inspectors between 2009 and 2012, according to the International Fund for Animal Welfare. The administration also destroyed more than 6 tons of seized tusks and carvings at the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge outside of Denver in U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services Director Dan Ash said destroying the ivory was to send a message that the U.S. is keen to stamp out illegal trade in ivory.
We are in crisis. What we saw during just this last year alone is 30,000 elephants killed. This 6 tons of ivory behind me represents about 1,000 elephants. This ivory would generate $1,200 a pound on the international market. So this is extremely valuable material, and we're destroying it today because what we need to do is we need to reduce the demand for these products globally.
Despite a 1999 global ban on commercial ivory trading, the last 5 years have seen a dramatic surge in poaching that threatens to wipe out the roughly 500,000 elephants in Africa, experts say. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, this is Blessing Zulu.
Lawyers representing the editor of the state-controlled Sunday Mail newspaper, Edmund Kudzai, today failed to file a bail application at the High Court as the Committee to Protect Journalists urged the authorities to release him. Police arrested Kudzai on Thursday morning last week after raiding his office at Herald House, and he appeared in a magistrate court yesterday, but no bail application was posted because he needs to approach the higher court, I beg your pardon, the High Court, owing to the seriousness of allegations against him. He is charged with attempting to commit an act of insurgency, banditry, sabotage, or terrorism, and subverting the constitutional government, charges that carry a life sentence. Kudzai is also accused of being the anonymous Facebook blogger Baba Jukwa. His lawyer, Admire Rubaya, told Studio 7 he failed to file the bail application because of a missing affidavit, adding he will be able to do so tomorrow. The Committee to Protect Journalists said the authorities should release Kudzai and drop the charges. We spoke to his lawyer, Rubaya, earlier on.
As you know, he was remanded in custody on Saturday and he has remained in custody. He has been remanded to the 7th of July while he's in custody, pending outside in the application for bail pending trial in the High Court. The simple reason being that one of the charges is a third stage offense and it could not be heard by a magistrate the moment the prosecutor general decided to oppose bail.
What evidence is there?
There's nothing much which I can say as evidence. The main basis relates to the Baba Jukwa issue.
And lastly, Mr. Rubaya, can you tell us if your client has been treated well while he's in police custody?
To me, he has not complained.
That was Admire Rubaya, a lawyer representing jailed Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai, speaking with Studio 7 on the line from Harare. Meanwhile, ZANU-PF officials are said to be disowning Kudzai as inter-party tensions rise over the arrest. Kudzai is said to have worked for the party's information department during the presidential election campaign period. However, ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo described him as a mere volunteer who was not employed by the party. We spoke to media analyst Nhlanhla Ngwenya, also the director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, the Zimbabwe chapter, who says Kudzai's arrest is a wake-up call for internet users to exercise caution when blogging.
Well, what That has been happening without actually delving into what the recent arrest of the Sunday Mail editor. What exactly we can take out of this whole episode is questions around the safety of communicating online. How safe and secure are our correspondences through online platforms? What is clear, or what this episode is confirming, is that nothing is safe at all. It will be only those that are naive who think that they can hide and so on and not get easily caught. Particularly if they are not aware of how to secure their communication on the internet. If you recklessly communicate on the internet, you might be caught. So this is a clear message. So it's a bit worrying, especially when it relates to freedom of expression. And using all available platforms to express one thought or propagate one opinion.
That was Nhlanhla Ngwenya, a media analyst and also the director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, the Zimbabwe chapter. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. If you are in South Africa, listen to Studio 7 through the following number, 010-591-6465.
If you are in America or Canada, you can tune in to our phone number 712-432-5882. Once again, 712-432-5882.
If you are in Britain, call 033-00-10334. Once again, 033-00-10334.
The Minister of Education has written to the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, or PTUZ, notifying it that it is no longer allowed to visit schools. The letter, dated June 18, 2014, and signed by Education Ministry Permanent Secretary Constance Chigwamba, stresses that the ministry reached that decision after noticing that the union has deviated from the authorized activity of distributing its paraphernalia. Chigwamba noted that instead, the PTUZ is now conducting meetings at schools for, quote, other ulterior motives and also disrupting the teaching and learning processes, of quote. But PTUZ Secretary General Raymond Majongwe says they are surprised by this decision since they are a law-abiding trade union.
I think we are not at all worried. We are not intimidated because it's a legal nullity. The ministry or the permanent secretary has no authority to write that note. If anything, we are simply saddened because of a serious misreading of the law. There is a statutory instrument, Section 6 of Statutory Instrument 45 of 1998, that allows registered organizations to visit their members within working hours. And we are equally surprised as to where the permanent secretary is getting this authority. And we dismiss it with the contempt it deserves. And we are simply saying they must stop harassing headmasters as they are doing. Because we have it on good authority that they've asked several headmasters to write reports on what PTUZ was saying during the meetings that they held. And we want to believe that Mrs. Chigwamba must be advised correctly and accordingly that what she is doing is illegal.
Are you going to challenge this development?
We surely are. We are obviously going to make it very clear because already we have engaged the minister, Comrade Dokora, because he called me personally before he left for Brussels. And I want to believe we are obviously going to raise many other matters. Like we have said, we want to meet the president. And we also don't want to take this matter upwards because we have so many other options. We would want the Attorney General to genuinely advise the permanent secretary that she is delving into a territory she is not qualified to interfere with.
That was Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongwe in Harare. Meanwhile, the government has reintroduced the hardship allowance that it had scrapped in 2009 when it introduced dollarization. Rural teachers are now getting a 5% allowance of their basic salaries instead of the 15% their unions were demanding. Zimbabwe Teachers Association President and Apex Council Chairman Richard Gundani tells Ntungamili Nkomo that while they welcome the development, they hope the government will soon review the percentage upwards.
when it is translated to figures, that 5% becomes something very small. It is a very small figure. If we are talking about $15, $20, these are very small figures. So we haven't achieved much. Government still has a lot of work to do around that. We still also, as unions, as the Apex Council, have a lot of work to do around that, so that we pressurize government, so that more money is made available, so that this raw service allowance is a meaningful figure that is going to incentivize and motivate all government officers who work in the rural areas, in remote areas. It is very evident on the ground that qualified personnel, when they are deployed in rural setups, in rural areas where there are different hardships, they don't stay there for a long time. And yet, these are the places where development has to occur if the country has to prosper, if the economy has to prosper. These are the areas where development is really needed. And the most of the officers who are working out there are doing a tremendous job. They are making huge sacrifices and making a huge contribution to the development of the country.
That was ZIMTA President Richard Gundani speaking with Studio 7 from Gweru, Midlands Province.
Now we take a quick look at regional and international news.
Local officials and residents in northeastern Nigeria say suspected Islamist militants have kidnapped more than 90 people in Borno State. They say the abductions took place last weekend as gunmen carried out a series of raids in several villages about 100 kilometers from the state capital Maiduguri. They said most of the victims were women and girls.
A Sudanese woman who received the death sentence for her refusal to renounce her Christian faith has been rearrested in Khartoum a day after she was freed from prison. Lawyers for Mariam Yaya Ibrahim say security officials arrested the woman and her husband, Daniel Wani, at the airport on Tuesday as they tried to board a plane with their two young children.
And Australia has summoned Egypt's ambassador to protest the conviction of an Australian journalist on charges he and his Al Jazeera colleagues supported the banned Muslim Brotherhood and spread false news. The seven-year sentence is announced Monday for Peter Grest, Egyptian-Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Baha Mohamed drew harsh reactions from leaders and press freedom groups around the world.
The Civil Service Commission says the government is taking urgent measures to address gender imbalances in its 300,000 workforce, in which the majority of employees are currently men. Reporter Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Commissioner Stephen Ngwenya, who was standing in for Chairperson Maria Wandanzua, told Parliament's Women Affairs, Gender and Community Development Portfolio Committee that the civil service has 145,511 male employees compared to 134,699 females. Ngwenya said the commission is now taking measures to ensure that gender equality and balance is addressed as enshrined in the new constitution.
Whenever we are interviewing people for promotion posts, even way down to the ministries, we emphasize that if it's neck and neck with men, a woman will be given first preference, not that the man will be discarded.
Ngwenya, however, said affirmative action for unqualified women is not good for women in Zimbabwe's civil service. He noted that most discrepancies in the civil service management was largely because senior employees in most parts of the country were not keen to leave their spouses and families and take up management posts in Harare, where most of them are positioned.
People from Mutare, from Bulawayo, from Gwanda, from Binga don't want to come to Harare, especially female members. And not long ago, we interviewed people for chief accountants. There were three ladies who qualified from Bulawayo. They came to Harare. And when the time came for them to be interviewed, they said, unless you're going to create these posts in Bulawayo, sorry, we can't leave our families out there.
Out of the 29 permanent secretaries in the civil service, 20 are men and only 9 are women. Out of the 587 management positions in the civil service, only 241 are occupied by females and the rest by men. Ngwenya urged parliamentarians to encourage women in their constituencies to apply for posts in the civil service so that the commission can achieve gender equality and balance. Responding to committee chairperson Beata Nyampinga's complaints that there was abuse and discrimination against women when it came to promotions in the civil service, Ngwenya said this is now being done by a committee of no less than 6 officials from different government departments, but under the supervision of the Civil Service Commission. Ngwenya said those found violating civil service regulations will be punished. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
And in sports news, it is the same old Dynamos and Highlanders story in Zimbabwean football as Bosso bite the dust once again, leaving fans fuming. Reporter Michael Kariati gives us the story.
Highlanders fans are fuming as their team failed for the 8th year running to beat bitter rivals Dynamos after succumbing to a 1-0 loss at the National Sports Stadium yesterday, courtesy of a Washington Pakamisa 34th minute goal. Coaches have come and gone in the past 8 years, but still, Bosso have failed to break the jinx, and this time around, the club supporters are blaming Zambian mentor Kelvin Kayindu for fielding the wrong first 11. Thousands of the team's followers flocked to the National Sports Stadium, hoping for a change of fortune, and one of them is Mkondoloza Kumalo, who threw stones at Kayindu after the team's defeat.
If we are coaching a big team like Islanders, supposed to use common sense.
Another Islanders fan, Love Musbanda, is resigned to fate, admitting that Dynamos are far much superior to their side. While Highlanders are crying over spilled milk, Dynamos coach Calisto Pasua is happy that his team has now caught up with the leaders on the Premier Soccer League table. The Harare Giants are on 22 points, the same as leaders Wange and Haumine, but Dynamos are way behind the pecking order due to their inferior goal difference. With Highlanders beaten, ZPC Kariba now remain the only unbeaten side in the 16-team assembly after a 1-0 draw with Shabani Mine. But coach Saul Chaminuka thinks his team was robbed by the match officials.
If we allow people to rob us like this, then we may as well let go the game.
For the first time this year, Capes United picked up their first 3 points away from home with a 2-0 victory over Chiredzi, and warning bells are ringing at the sugar plantations as their team is slowly sinking into the lower echelons of Division 1 football. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thanks, Michael. World Cup action continues in Brazil today with Group D teams Uruguay and Italy playing for a berth in the next stage, while in another Group D match, Costa Rica, which has already qualified to the next group stages, beat England 1-0. Voice of America's Nico Pino in Brazil spoke to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye earlier on some of today's fixtures and what can be expected out of them.
Hi, it's Nico Pino, live from Brazil, in Brasilia.
Nico, we see today is a big day for Africa with Ivory Coast fighting for dear life against Greece in Group C.
Well, the scenario is quite simple. If Ivory Coast wins the game, they're going to advance the next round. And it's going to be history for Ivory Coast because they have never advanced the next round. They have their destiny in their hands and they just have to win against the Greece. If you look at the game that they did against Colombia, they lost the game, but I mean, it was good performance from Didier Drogba and his teammates.
But in the last match for Ivory Coast, we saw Didier Drogba not in the starting lineup. Do you think the coach will change his starting lineup today?
You're right. That's been going controversy in Ivory Coast because for the first 2 games, Drogba has not started the game. And there is pressure against the coach, Sabri Lamouchi, to make him start the game. But to be quite honest, I'm not sure he's going to start this game too because it was worth it against Japan. Against Colombia, it did not help the team. So I think this is a conversation between the coach and Drogba. Thank you, Nico Pino, live from Brazil.
Thank you, Nico. That now brings us to the end of the show. But before we go, please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, on the international campaign launched by